Welcome to Gay Mystery Authors with Brad Shreve, featuring interviews with some of the most renowned authors and up-and-coming talent in LGBTQ mysteries, suspense, and thrillers. Plus, Justine Adamek is here with her weekly recommendation.
Before we get to Justine's reviews this week, we're going to do a shout out to a few people. This is going to be something special. We're finally starting to get some reviews in, Justine, as you know.
Yeah.
And because these are our first reviews, we want to give some special thank yous to these folks. And so I'm going to start out. The first one is from John Copenhaver. This is long overdue. He posted something on Twitter that I'm going to read. And what he said is, I thoroughly enjoyed listening to the interviews with Michael Kraft and Michael Nava on Gay Mystery Authors podcast. I'm so thrilled, in all caps, this podcast exists. Check it out. Thank you, John. And then on Apple, we got a review from Drucifer. And he put, tremendous show. This show is a peek into a great genre of literature. You'll love it! Exclamation point. Yeah, I think you had a couple.
I've got a couple. Okay. Wild 3 on Apple. Loads of fun. Brad does a wonderful job coaxing authors to talk about their books and process. Gems of wisdom and experience for authors and readers alike. And then J.S. Kleiman, also on Apple, says, great content and interesting interviews. I'm hoping the great content refers to our segment because it has interesting interviews separately.
And then the last one is All of This Apps, I think is how it's pronounced.
Yes.
But anyway, that's the best I can do. They simply put, love it, great podcast. So it's nice and simple. We're not going to read these off every week, but we're doing this week to encourage people to please give us some reviews. If you like gay mystery genre and would like others to come in and find out that we're here and join, give us some reviews so that when they see the show, they can see the reviews and we'll listen in like you are. So you can do it on Apple. You can do it on Stitcher. A lot of the other apps out there have reviews on them. So please do so.
I think we should still give shout outs to the people who leave reviews, even if we don't read the reviews word for word. What do you think, Brad?
That's a pretty good idea.
Yeah. So if you want to get, you want a shout out on the show, go leave a review.
If you do nothing else, do a rating. We got quite a few 5-star ratings, but reviews are much better. Writing something up just means something special. It makes us feel good. And like I said, hopefully it brings others in to watch the show.
Yeah.
The other thing is, if you have a suggestion for us or would just like to make a comment, what you can do is go to the contact page on our website, www.gaymysteryauthors.com. On the contact page, there's a phone number where you can call and leave a message. Or if you prefer, there's one of those standard contact forms. You can fill that out and send it in to us as well. So either of those would be great. A review is great. Sending us a contact or a phone call is great. Whatever, we would love to hear from you. That's what it comes down to.
People can also send us their books to review, Brad. They can either send an inquiry through the contact form, in which ways we'll reply, or they can just send us a ebook, preferably in a Mobi format, directly to our email, which is info@gaymysteryauthors.com.
And we want more of those. Justine wants more than she can possibly handle.
Yes.
So please get those in. She's been asking for those.
And if you've sent books in, I haven't gone to all the ones we have. So don't despair. They're on my list.
Speaking of reviews, I don't even know who you're reviewing this week or what book. So I'm anxious to hear what you have to say.
Well, I dug around a bit and looked through some of our submissions. And I came up with one that I was in the mood for called The Stuffed Coffin by Dieter Moizzi.
Ooh, I like the title.
Yeah, it was a good title, and it is a classic mystery. It starts out in classic mystery trope. Young man goes on a holiday that he had originally booked with his boyfriend, and then he and his boyfriend break up, so he's taking his holiday alone, and he's interested in all the gorgeous young men that are at this resort on a Greek isle. There's a romance with one of the young men, but it takes up not too much of the story, and it fits in. It provides its own plot twist within the story. A little bit of the misunderstandings and the denouement are all part of the mystery.
Nothing wrong with a little romance.
Nothing wrong with a little romance. But I hate it when you got a mystery and the romance is tacked on, and this romance is interwoven, and it works beautifully. Now, the book is translated from the French. The translation is very smooth. The book itself is well written. The resort is on a Greek isle. It's a fictional Greek isle with a fictional town, but he describes it all beautifully, the feel of the air, the scenery, the other people in this travel group who are annoying to no end. The translation is good, but occasionally there are turns of phrase that are in the original French that took me by surprise. For example, when someone upset the situation, he said it was as if they had pissed in a violin. That's as French an expression as I've ever heard. So one of the tour group ends up dying in the pool. Everybody thinks it's suspicious, and then they think it's not suspicious. And then somebody else turns up dead. Being on vacation, the relationship he's in is kind of, falling apart. He ends up being curious and launches his own investigation. And we all know just how much your own investigation gets you in trouble. You're an amateur sleuth. Bodies are dropping around you. Do you go to the police? No, of course not. You investigate it yourself. And eventually you get into trouble, and eventually the police lose their temper with you. Somehow it all works out at the end. It's a classic setup because it works so well. And you hang details on top of that, and the details you hang and how you write it and the characterizations you come up with all make it a good mystery. And this is one of the best.
So another fun amateur sleuth one.
It's a fun amateur sleuth, and it is the first in a series, and I can't wait to read the next one in this series.
So are you ready to give us your rating?
Yes. I think it's a glowing recommendation.
Another glowing.
Yeah. A lot of these books are very well written, and this one is particularly so.
Another one on my list, which is so long, I'll never get to all of them, but I still put them in the Kindle anyway. Someday that thing's going to short out on me. So before we move on, let's give them the name and the author again.
It's called The Stuffed Coffin by Dieter Moitzi, Moitzi. Hey, I have an update for you. Remember last week I was reviewing the Marshall James series, and the first one, like this one, only the first one was out.
The one by Mark McNeese.
Mark McNeese. And Mark McNeese has confirmed that he's got two more books coming in that series.
Thank you for getting that confirmed. Any news from Requeer Tales this week?
Well, Requeer Tales is bringing out not a mystery. It's called The Family of Max Desire by Robert Farrow. Well, we had another mystery we released a couple months ago where there's a travel writer who's on vacation in an island resort, much like this one, and he finds a body in the bottom of the pool, much like this one. The book that Recruit Tales releases is called The Black Marble Pool by Stan Leventhal, and that's another mystery in the classic fashion.
Whenever I think of a body in a pool, I always think of Sunset Boulevard. How gay is that?
That's right.
So the other question I have for you is, we've been talking about the Buffy Comforter. You bought it a few weeks ago. So how are you sleeping these days?
I am sleeping very well. I got to say, I used to toss and turn so that it got tangled. My comforter would get tangled up. I wake up in the morning with it laying on top of me just the way I fell asleep the night before. And I know everybody thinks, oh, what an exaggeration this is. But, rarely do I like a product as much as this one. I really like the fact that it's environmentally friendly and it's made from recycled water bottles. And it's as far from a water bottle as one could be, but it reduces waste out there. So if people want to buy a Buffy comforter, just go to the link on our website, click through, see what it's all about. There's a 7-day free trial and give it a try.
Well, I'm glad you're sleeping well on your cloud.
Yep. So you're on to Ari Bradshaw now.
Yes, I am. Ready for a delightful conversation with her.
I can't wait to hear it. See you next week, Brad.
You can keep up with the Gay Mystery Authors on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Links are on our website, gaymysteryauthors.com.
Our guest today, Ari Bradshaw, is a 4-time Lambda Literary Award finalist in mystery and a 2013 Rainbow Awards first runner-up for Best Lesbian Novel. Before beginning a full-time writing career, she worked in professional theater and also taught at both university and high school levels. A native of North Carolina, the setting for the majority of her novels, Bradshaw now makes her home in Oklahoma. She writes in many genres, from fun Southern romantic romps of the Adventures of Decky and Charlie series to the intensely bone-chilling Rainy Bell thrillers. Well, you offer something for everyone. Welcome, Ari.
Thank you for having me, Brad.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you on here today.
Great. Good to be here.
Well, one thing that jumps out at me from your bio right away that I'd like to start with is that you worked in professional theater before becoming a writer. How did that happen? What was the path that led you to become a writer?
Well, the path to being a writer started when I was very young. I used to write a lot when I was young. And then I went off to college. I was dating a guy who was working lights for a theater show. I was sitting in the audience. The follow spot operator showed up intoxicated. So they needed someone to run the follow spot. And I was the person that got volunteered to do that. And I fell in love immediately, changed my major in college, I was political sci, going to be a lawyer, changed all that, and went into theater, which led eventually to writing again. So it kind of came full circle. When I started writing, I wrote a play.
Mm-hmm.
And that led to that desire to really finish some of the stories that I had swimming around in my head and the characters and stuff. So it was kind of a circuitous route, but I made it back to writing. And I think theater made me a better writer.
So you went from poli sci to the art side of the world.
Yes, and I think you can tell today that political science and theater are not too far apart.
Not anymore, that's for sure. Actually, I think they've always been somewhat similar.
Yes.
Well, are there any authors that have influenced your writing?
I love Tennessee Williams. One of my favorite things is a scenic description that Tennessee Williams wrote for Cat on a Hot Tin Roof that you find in some of the copy. It's not in every copy of it, but if you look really hard, you may find a copy. And it is a beautiful description of scenery and theatricality. I read his bios. I love Tennessee Williams. Thomas Wolfe, the North Carolinian. Fanny Flagg, Harper Lee, Southern Gothic. I've always enjoyed those books. And then I'm also a huge fan of realistic murder and rule, people like that.
Well, your writing has been diverse. You've done romance comedies, historical fiction, but most of them have been thrillers. Yes. What is it about thrillers that draws you?
My mother was a true crime novel reader, and we had those detective magazines hidden in a little trunk in her room. And I used to sneak in there and read that stuff all the time. It fascinated me. Coming out of high school was about the same time that the behavioral analysis units began. Behavioral science, I read some stuff about that. It was in its infancy. I wanted to be an FBI agent. I came out of high school with that in mind. I never forgot that. I think what I've realized about my characters is that many of them play roles that at one point in time in my life, I may have wanted to play myself. So part of me really wanted to be a behavioral analyst. I am fascinated by the criminal mind. I've read as much stuff as I could put my hands on that is published by that unit of the FBI. I was fascinated by it. And one day, Rainey Bell sprung to mind, and I began writing the book, the first one. And then I knew from the minute that I came up with the title, the name Rainey Bell, that it would be a series. I just knew it.
Now, is there a particular character that you aspired to? You said that you pictured yourself as some of the characters.
Oh, I've aspired to be them all. I just didn't make it to many of them. If you read the Deckie and Charlie series, you'll find that Deckie was a theater teacher who wrote a book that got picked up by Hollywood, and that's how she made her money. And so that's what she does. She writes books and does genealogy. A lot of that character is me. I do genealogy. I did teach theater. I do write books. Hollywood didn't pick me up, though, and I'm not rich. So those are the differences. Molly Kincaid is a lawyer. She's what I call the female Matlock of the South. I love her. She can't be held down. She's unbeatable. She will survive. She's a survivor. She's had so many things thrown at her as a young girl, but then she's also had so much privilege. And so there's all kinds of things going on with her. And she shows up in all the stories as the brilliant lawyer who looks like Jodie Foster. And that's a joke, because everywhere she goes, people think she's Jodie Foster. And she has to say, no, not Jodie Foster. So she shows up in all the books. So when I was young, very, very young, I was eating dinner with my parents, and somebody came up to the table and asked my parents if I was Jodie Foster and if they could have my autograph. And so that's where that comes from. So there's like, you find little tidbits of yourself all over your books, mm-hmm. but they may only mean something to you, and it never means anything to anybody else. But I'd say I'm the closest to Deckie Bradshaw and her relationship with Charlie Warren. My wife's name is Charlie, or it's Debbie Charlene, who is the character in the book is named Charlene Warren. Her mother's name is Warren. So there's all kinds of, it's just a weaving of myself amongst the characters.
Well, Deckie and Charlie and then the Rainey Bell thrillers, those are what you've been most prolific in. But one of your, I believe it's your latest book, is Emendare?
Yes. Yes, it is.
How is that different than your other books?
Emendare is very different. For one thing, in all of the other books, the main character identifies as a lesbian. In this book, the main character makes a point of saying she doesn't like labels. I guess if you had to apply one to her, she's bisexual, but she's just, you know, she doesn't fall in love with parts. So, and she's not involved with anybody. She does get involved with a woman sort of in the book, but there's no romance. I mean, there's no romance in this book at all. She meets an old friend and they set up a date, but that's it. There's none of the ordinary romance that seems to be a requirement. And boy, I'm going to get added for this, mm-hmm. but it seems to be a requirement of what is termed lesbic or lesbian fiction by my contemporaries. There seems to need to be a romantic element for it to fit into those categories. So I don't believe Emendare really fits. There are gay men in the book. There's a pedophile in the book. There are racists. There are MAGA people. There are liberal arts people. It's a conglomeration of everything you run into in your life. So it doesn't fit neatly into the lesbian romance that I could shove the rest of my books in there. I can literally shove them into the lesbian world because there is some sort of romantic element in the book somewhere. But in this book, there isn't.
Well, it's been well received with glowing reviews, but it hasn't been as popular as some of the other novels. Would you say that is the reason?
I'd say so. You know, there's a lot going on in the world today. And a lot of people are looking for something to escape to. And being reminded of our racism and the social dynamics of how we got where we are today, which is what the book is about, I don't think a lot of people want that right now. They want to escape.
Yeah, you remind me of the old MGM musicals that were really popular during the Depression, because it was the exact opposite of what was going on outside the movie theaters.
Right, right. I think that, you know, romance is a huge industry. I don't think we'll ever catch up, but mystery and theater is right behind that. So this is a mystery. It just doesn't have a romantic element in it. And I think that's why it's not as popular with my normal readers. But everyone that's read it has said they really enjoyed, well, I don't think enjoy is the right word. They were moved by it. That would be a better way to say it.
But, well, as I said, you've gotten some great reviews on it. Did you know going into it that it was going to be less marketable?
Oh, boy. You know, the day I start worrying about commercial properties of a book, I'm going to need to stop writing. And I think that may be part of the problem in literature today, is there are so many copies of something that's successful. And we see that tropes keep coming up and up and up and up. And so I don't want to ever write a book to sell it.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a need. I felt a need. I was writing something else. I'm in the middle of, I have 11 projects going on. I moved from one to the other. If I haven't mentioned, I suffer from adult attention deficit. They changed the name, hyperactivity disorder, ADHD. So I flit around a lot, but that book grabbed me. It was something that got on my brain and would not go away. It was a seed that was planted in my head when I was 12 years old. That's how far back this book goes with me. So it was something that I finally just, the time was right to finally write it. So I did.
Yeah, it was time. Now, you've kind of already touched on it when you talked about the romance, and I'm going to get you in a little more trouble here to kind of go a little further and a little deeper. What are your thoughts on the state of lesbian fiction today?
There's a lot of it. A lot of it. When I started, I remember the people who were already writing it or writing in that niche, and I shy away from the label lesbian fiction, because as it is defined by the genre itself, or not the genre, the niche, because it's not a genre, by the niche itself, I don't really think I write on the edges of it, let's just say. And I think there are quite a few of us that do. So there's no judgment there. It's just that there's a type of, boy, you are going to get me in trouble, aren't you? I'm trying to say this without making anybody feel bad or without sounding like I'm judging somebody for what they choose to read. I don't care what people read. I hope they read for enjoyment. I hope they read for education. I hope they read because I hope they will always read and never stop. But there has to be a place on the shelf for people like me who write books about women like me that do not focus on the romance aspect of that person's life. And my characters just don't. I do have books that they do. I did write two what I call lesbian fiction books. I did write two of those. They fit squarely in that definition. There's a lot of sex, a lot of use of the word hot. I might have used a word moist in there at least once. Who knows? But I did that just to see if I could, but I didn't enjoy it. It's just not my thing. Other people write beautiful erotica. I've read erotica that I really enjoyed. I've read erotica that I did not enjoy. I've read romances that, like The Notebook, I love that book, but I read no more of his romances because they're all the same. I think everybody has a right to read what they want to, but they also need to move over a little bit. And let some of us on the shelf, you know, let the mysteries on the shelf without that romantic element. And they'll promise me that nobody is keeping us off the shelf. But if I go in the lesbian fiction groups that I belong to and I read the Daily Post, I can just scan through them. And they're all about romance, 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 romance. Or the conversations will be about... If somebody starts talking about a sex toy, those will go on for like days on end. Those conversations go on for days on end. But nobody's having a literary conversation.
Yeah.
And that's what I miss. And I, you know, that's just me. I'm an old English major. I loved going to college. I love sitting in class. I love taking things apart. Sometimes the curtains are blue because they're just blue, but sometimes they're blue because they were meaning something, you know, all that stuff. I love all that stuff. And you just don't find that kind of discussion. And I miss it. I so miss it. And I certainly don't want anybody to think that I think romance is, I live a romance. I met this woman 31 years ago and every day is a romance. So I get it. I get it. I understand why people read romance. It makes you feel good. There's other things that we can read too.
In my novel, the main character is a gay male. And somebody said to me once, you know, it'll be nice when you maybe someday write mainstream fiction. And I said, what are you talking about? That is my mainstream.
Right. Right. I don't want to write mainstream. I want the mainstream to come read what I'm writing.
Exactly.
I want them to move over where I am. I don't want to move into their stream. I want the river to widen a little bit, you know? Lena Waite is a producer, director, actor, she's done a little bit of everything. And she said she liked her lesbian or her gay characters to just be part of the story and not to like point them out, not make a big deal about it. You know, they're just there. They're just there. They just exist just like they do in our lives. They're just there. And she doesn't make a point of doing lesbian or gay work. There are lesbian and gay people in her work because there are lesbian and gay people in our lives. And I thought that was a beautiful way to look at it. And that's kind of the way I look at this writing thing. But I do also, I got to pay homage to, you know, there are a lot of people who paid a lot of dues for me to be able to sit here and say whatever I want to about lesbian literature. So I have to pay homage to those people.
Amen to that.
They didn't, you know, those pulp novels made it so that I could do this. But we also have to remember there's an entire audience of people that didn't suffer through the kinds of otherness that we older people did. And I say older in a nice way. I'm 58. I'll just go. I'm 58. Proud to be here. Glad I made it this far. Looking forward to another many, 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 many years. But I am of a certain age where I did have to hide who I was on a daily basis. I had to hide that I was married to a woman for a long time. And when I finally did start writing books about lesbians, the reason I wrote under R.E. Bradshaw is because I was still employed as a public school teacher. That is not my name. And I kept it because unbeknownst to me, people immediately started reading the books that I wrote. And I was stuck with it. I met another writer who said she wished he had her name back. And I do too. I do too. I don't like hiding behind. It's not, I'm not hiding my name. It's Vicky. And I'm not hiding behind this name, but it is my public persona. That is who she is.
I've heard others say the same thing as well.
I had to. I was teaching public school. If they had found out I had written a book with a lesbian main character in it, I wouldn't have had a job.
This was in North Carolina?
No, this was in Oklahoma.
Well, both bright red states, so I guess.
Oh, yes. There are no blue dots in Oklahoma. So I say that we are, I live in the gayborhood. Really, honestly, there are a lot of gay people that live in my neighborhood, so we call it the gayborhood. So there are spots. We're here. We're just not very loud. We're here, though.
We're everywhere.
Yeah, we're everywhere. And we're in a lot more places than people want to believe. I'm just living my life, and I hope everybody's living a healthy, happy life. And I wish everybody had that attitude towards me, you know, just be kind.
Next question I have for you is that most writers have other things that they're passionate about. What are yours?
I am passionate about the climate and what it's doing to our planet. I am passionate about what the climate change is doing to our animals. I'm extremely passionate about what we're doing by taking away natural habitats and just we're killing off species. We're in the middle of a species decline. I just really wish we could just everybody take a collective breath and say, okay, let's fix this. I know that, again, I'm old enough to remember those commercials, and I remember seeing news stories about L.A. where you couldn't even see L.A. and New York, where it was just the smog was so horrible. And, you know, it's not like that now, and it's because we passed laws to help. And now we're undoing everything one day at a time, and I'm very passionate about that. I'm not going to talk about the other part of politics. I'll just say, please vote. Please. Make sure you're registered to vote and vote. The reason we're in this situation is because people did not vote. So please register to vote. If you know people that aren't registered, please help them get registered. We need to register to vote and we need to make change. Be the change. That's my political spiel for the day.
Well, you know, it's living in Los Angeles. A lot of people don't realize living in the city, you can actually see the mountains. And I love it when in the wintertime, when you're looking at the cityscape and you see the snow-capped mountains in the background, but you look at the pictures from the 1950s and you can't see the building next door.
Right.
So it's amazing what a change we've made. And I hate to see us going back.
Right. I really do hate to see that. And my reaction to our political climate is one of the things that sparked Emendary being written. There is some political commentary in the book, but I tried to... The question was asked, how did we get here? How did we get into this situation where we have white supremacy on the front page? We are, you know, where did all this come from? And this book, Emendary, is an answer to that because it goes back to the 1970s. It goes back to the 60s and 70s. And it shows you that what I was saying all along is that it didn't come out of nowhere. We grew up with it. These are the people we grew up with. We grew up with this kind of racism and white privilege. We grew up where the poor were taken advantage of. All of this has always been here. We've just turned a blind eye to it, maybe. Maybe we just thought that we had maybe taken care of all this hate and this feeling, these feelings that people have that about others, the otherness of the others has become more popular again. Tribalism, all of that stuff. And I just wanted to say in this book that these are the seeds that were planted in the 70s. This is all coming to fruition now. Just because it says that in the book, a guy in the book, one of the characters says that just because some man in Washington signed a piece of paper doesn't mean it's going to change down here.
Well, it sounds like a lot of the book came from your heart.
Yeah, well, it also was spawned by an incident in my childhood where a young friend of mine was, I have to be careful. No one was ever charged with anything, but he died as a result of, he was found drowned at the ferry dock. That's really all I can say about it. But nobody ever was charged with anything. It was never. So that stuck with me from the age of 12. That's why I was saying an incident. That book was started being written for me when I was 12 years old. And it took me to 58 to finally say, you know, I think I need to do this.
Well, I can see why it would take that long.
Yeah. And I wanted people to understand that, you know, that where we are it didn't spring up overnight. So check yourself.
Well, you've been writing since 2010, and you're now writing full time. To what do you attribute your success?
I don't know. I don't know why people like them. I like them. So maybe, you know, I write stories that I like to read. These stories play out in my head, whether I write them down or not. So I might as well write them down and let other people enjoy them. I've always had some sort of movie going on in my head. A song plays on the radio. I'm writing a movie to it. I've been doing that my whole life. I've just, you know, I was I lived in places where I was a lonely child a lot, and I had a lot of imaginary people. I was never alone. I was always acting out something with imaginary people all around and enjoying my life and having fun doing it. So it just came naturally to share those stories, and I enjoy them.
Over the years, what would you say has improved in your writing?
I stopped using so many commas.
Oh, I'm the king of commas.
Oh, my goodness. Being in theater, I try to tell people this, that, and I had to learn to try to stop telling the reader how to read my book. That's what the commas were about. They were not about grammar. They were about how to read it. As in, like, when you're scripting a play, when we would sit down and do the readings, we would say, okay, you do the different readings. You read it different ways. You read a sentence one way or another. And when you decide on how you want to say it, you use commas to take your breaths in the right places and put the emphasis in the right stuff. And so I was basically telling people to be Southern while they were reading it, to slow down and appreciate each word. And you really can't do that. You get eaten up by the police, the grammar police. They really come at you hard on those commas. But, you know, I'm not the only writer who has an overabundance of commas in their work. And some of those writers are very, very famous. So I'm just going to, I try hard not to. I probably put too few now. I noticed today I was rereading some of Emendary, just to make sure. That's another thing. After you've written so many books, you really have to keep reading your own stuff to keep up with what you wrote. It starts to all blend together. I was noticing places. I was like, man, you really should have put a comma there. You know. some other things I've learned is to I had quite a bit of success very quickly. I was a bit overwhelmed by it. And I also started letting other people into my life and into my creative life, I should say. And those people were not there when I first wrote those books that were very, very successful. And they didn't need to be there in that part of my life for me to remain successful. And I had to learn that part of it. I've been asked what surprises you the most about creating books. What surprised me the most about it was that I was expected to be friends with my readers.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure how that was before social media. I think it took more effort, like buy a stamp, handwrite the letter, to contact an author previous to social media. And now they can be on the screen in seconds. They can love you or hate you in a healthy or unhealthy way. And that can be a toss-up. And I understand why so many authors disappear forever from the public scene. And in my case, it did not serve me well, my creativity well, to have so many people in my head. So I have to maintain a level of distance for my well-being. And I don't think some readers understand that they can love an author to death. King's Misery rings very true to me. Stephen King's Misery, it rings mm-hmm. extremely true to me, because it can become so intrusive that you can't write. You become stagnated. And one of the reasons people suffer from writer's block is because they let people into that part of their world. And so all these voices are in there, all this noise.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a little distant. And that makes you either aloof or cocky and all those words they say about women who are confident yet standoffish. You know, mm-hmm. I can't let them in. I just can't. I can't be that. I can't make them part of my daily lives and have conversations with them. And, you know, I enjoy interacting with people on Facebook, but I do keep it at a kind of a distance.
And that's interesting to me because you talk to a lot of writers and they're like, you must have a Facebook group and interact with your readers every day. That's the only way that you can be successful. And you're proof that that's not true.
Yeah, in a certain way. Well, I tell you, the biggest thing, I have that little lesbian fiction niche that is so supportive of their authors. You know, you got to give them a hands up for that. I mean, they're awesome. They support authors like crazy. So I don't want to take anything away from them.
Of course.
But what you have to understand is that our audience is a lot bigger than that. Our audience is we have a huge audience out there. I've been to mainstream book shows, and I know other authors who've been and don't enjoy doing that, but I've been and had a lot of success. At people coming up to the table, what do you write about? I talk about the book. I don't talk about the character's sexuality. I talk about the book. It's a mystery, you know? So what if it's a gay person solving the mystery? That's not the important part about this story. I don't avoid the truth with them, but I get them interested first. And I have ways of slipping in the sexuality. So it's not the first, you know, they don't have a chance to say no. They've already got it in their hand. They're looking at it. They're already interested. They're not going to, hey, they buy it. Then I get an email. Love your book. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's worth giving it a shot. So don't concentrate on that little group of people. I have very few people in my Facebook group that says Ari Bradshaw Books. It's my group. Those people, if they're listening, they're like, she never talks in there. They're right. I never talk. I never go in there. Every now and then I go in there, go, hey, how you doing? You know, and say something. No, I'm never in there. I drop by the social media groups with all the people who read. I try to be a part of the community from a little bit of a distance. So I hope they understand that it's not out of being aloof. It's protective. It's the imagery of the solitudinal writer off by the fireplace with the candle. Yeah, there's a reason for that. It's distracting. Everything else is distracting. So I try to limit the distractions in my life. Now, I do talk on Facebook a lot on my own page, the Ari Bradshaw page. I have one that's Ari Bradshaw Books. That I only talk about books on that page. I never talk about politics on that page ever. So I tell people if they want to find out when I have a book, subscribe to that page. When something's happening that is publishing related, I'll talk about it on that page. I have a website that has no politics on it whatsoever. You can go to that, find all the books there. But on my webpage, on my Facebook, Ari Bradshaw Book, and on my Twitter, I'm very political. I talk about my life with my wife, which is hilarious. She's hilarious. I think I should just follow her around with a tape recorder. I'd never have to write again. You know, this is funny stuff. And that's how the Deckney Charlie Brooks got started, because she's so funny that I had to put her in these books. And I am so much like Decky in the just walking around behind her with this goofy look on my face, because I fell in love with this woman and she still leaves me speechless. When she walks in a room, my heart still pitter patters. And it'll be 32 years this year.
All I can say is, wow.
Awesome. I'm really, awesome. Really lucky. I know how lucky I am. So I did write some romances about us, but they're more comedies than there are romances before it's over with.
Well, now we have reached the time in the interview that I change the name of this every week. I used to call it Question Authors Hate. Now I'm just going to say Awkward Questions Authors Get.
Okay.
So what I do is randomly pick a question. So I'm going to spin the wheel here.
All righty. Please don't ask me what kind of underwear I wear. I swear to God, I've been asked that in every interview. It's just like, why do you care?
No, I'm not going to ask you what kind of underwear you've got. Thank you. What I've got is something it's quite a bit different.
Okay, great.
Why haven't you written a New York Times bestseller?
I have. They just don't know it yet. I'm just kidding.
I love that answer.
I think if more people read Amandari, it would be. I think it's up there in that kind of message. I think it would be, but that's, you know, look, if you don't have an ego, you're not a writer. You got to believe in yourself a little bit. I believe in the message in that book. I really do. I think Out in the Panhandle would make a fantastic movie. I think the Rainy Bell series would make a really, really great television series. So you got to believe in yourself. You got to believe that your stuff is good. If you don't think it's good, why would other people read it?
I think that's one of the best awkward question answers that I've gotten so far. So good job on you.
Thank you. And I didn't have to tell you what kind of underwear I wear.
Nah, I don't care. Again, it's R.E. Bradshaw. And the name of the book that we've been talking the most about is Amandari. And I want to thank you very much for being on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me, Brad. And I really like your show. And I hope a lot of people will keep listening to it and really get involved in the gay mystery and read these books. They're great books, folks. We're writing good stuff. You need to read them.
And where's the best way that they can buy your books?
You can go to rebradshawbooks.com. And click on any of the book series. The ways to buy every one of the books is on there, and you can look at them, read the descriptions, and all of the different ways you can buy them is available for you right there. So you can go to Amazon or Nook or just buy straight from us. Ever how you want to do it, it's up to you.
If anybody wants to go to our website at gaymysteryauthors.com, I'll have a link in our show notes to your website as well.
Awesome, awesome. Come see the website. My wife manages the website for me, so it makes her very happy when she sees the numbers go up. So that would make me happy too.
Well, thank you again for being on.
Thank you, Brad. You have a great day.
You too.